it's been wonderful to be with you. And Chris Earle is here with his dad. I'm going to be doing Watch This. Is that it? Correct? Okay, good. So I had the privilege of driving down to see my mom. My mom's 101, living in assisted situation, and thank God, you know, I was worried about the weather, worried about this. Everything worked out beautifully, and what a privilege to spend time with her. Coming back, it was like rain, sleet, hail. I was, where are the frogs? I mean, it was totally, what is this weather? It's like it's still freezing out. Anyway, I'm going to put on a little tiny bit of something a little bit more uplifting, and then, oops, as I crash myself into the... I'll see you next week, and don't be late. Let's see, we're on here. Yes, yes, yes. On this one, I think. Is that it? Not sure I got the right one.
Hello, sir. We'll be right back. getting closer.
Oh, yeah? Watch this.
Watch what?
And now, before the next show starts, let's enjoy an intermission. You'll find our snack bar chock full of good things to eat and drink. Tasty, tempting hot dogs, thirst-quenching soft drinks, fresh, crunchy popcorn, a complete assortment of delicious candy, and a full line of cigarettes. You've plenty of time, so visit the snack bar now. A tasty treat will double your enjoyment of the show. For your convenience, we shall keep you informed of the remaining intermission time, 3 minutes before the next show starts. The next show will start in 2 minutes.
Just a minute, folks. Yes, that's all it takes to visit our refreshment counter in the lobby. There you'll find popcorn and an assortment of popular candy bars to please every taste. Try one of these delicious candy bars. Big Time, Butternut, Milkshake, Payday. Topped with Hollywood's super rich coating of the kind you like best. They taste wonderful, they're delicious, they're nutritious. Get one at our confection counter in the lobby now.
The next show will start in 1 minute.
WMFO Medford.
Hello, Medford. You're listening to a new radio program called Watch This on 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, Massachusetts. My name is Chris Earle. Thank you for listening and thank you for watching. Over the next 2 hours, we'll be talking about movies. One afternoon, I looked over my Blu-ray collection, the DVDs, the Laserdiscs, and the videotapes that I have, and I realized that I have just as many movies as I do CDs, cassettes, and records. So after 10 years of doing time travel with Chris Earle here on WMFO, this is a new show for 2018 based on the love of movies. I have a guest on, and they pick 5 flicks, and we talk about them when we play their soundtracks, because a favorite movie tells you a hell of a lot more about a person than just one of their favorite songs. My guest today is longtime listener and guest of my recently retired show, Time Travel with Chris Earle. But more important, he's my father. Please welcome Mr. Paul Earle. How you doing, Dad?
Fine.
Welcome. Welcome back.
Yes, we're having a beautiful weather day for a change.
It is. It is a beautiful weather day here. So Paul's 5 flicks, Dad picked 5 movies. And we're starting with the first one from 1951. It is The Day the Earth Stood Still. This is the opening of The Day the Earth Stood Still in the background. So 1951, it's the beginning of the 50s, and this is the movie that really kicked off the science fiction UFO genre, The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Thank you.
So, Dad, tell me why you picked this one. It's 1951. You're about what, nine? Eight, 9 years old?
Actually, I'm eight, but it wasn't released until 1953, right?
Yeah, pull up to the mic. You're away from the mic, Dad.
It wasn't?
So this one was released in 1951, Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah.
Yeah, War of the Worlds, 1953. So how old are you here?
I'm 8 years old.
8 years old.
But this is the first science fiction movie I remember ever seeing. And it was so impressive because we were in a world of atomic bombs and a lot of tests going on. So we would see testing on television of bombs in the desert of Nevada and also Bikini Atoll in the Pacific Ocean.
Bikini Atoll? What's that?
That's an island in the Pacific Ocean where we did atom bomb tests in the 50s.
Oh, no kidding. So this happened in the early 50s.
Yeah, it was throughout the 50s, but this was the beginning of seeing a science fiction movie.
Yeah.
Everything up to then had been Gone with the Wind or The Wizard of Oz or Westerns.
So Roswell happened in, what'd you say, around 1948? Does that sound right?
Yeah, if you go back to UFOs, unidentified flying objects in the air, and this turned the whole world on to, is there life as we know it out there? Or something out there, science fiction.
Uh-huh. So this was directed by Robert Wise. It starred Michael Rennie, Patricia Neal, and Hugh Marlowe. In Alien Lands, it tells people of Earth that they must live peacefully or they will be destroyed since they are a danger to other planets, if not themselves. It was distributed by 20th Century Fox. It was rated G. The running time was an hour and 32 minutes. Again, it's a sci-fi thriller from 1951 that kicked off all the sci-fi movies of the 50s. Bernard Herrmann, who did Taxi Driver, Psycho, and Twilight Zone, the Twilight Zone theme, he used something called a theremin to create the creepy score. One was pitched higher than the other one, so this is actually the first electrical score for a movie, too, and it caused a lot of composers to actually learn how to score movies after this. So do you know what a theremin is, Dad? You know what that thing is?
No.
A theremin is this electrical device, and you don't actually touch it. So you have one that one hand controls like the pitch, and the other one has like another bit of a frequency there, and you could play it almost like a fiddle, but you never actually touch the instrument. It's like an electronic rod, so it makes these weird noises. So these eerie effects were basically created by a guy from Russia named Leon Tumpma, which is basically theremin in Western world. He patented the device in 1928, and Bernard Herrmann made this soundtrack with it. So it's a controlling section. It used two metal antennas that sense the relative position of the person's hand and oscillators for a frequency with one hand and amplitude with the other. So the electric signals from the theremin are amplified and sent to the loudspeaker. And the musical score by Bernard Herrmann was what inspired a later guy, Danny Elfman, to be a composer. So this was also called Farewell to the Master, Journey to the World. The Army refused to cooperate at all after reading the script, and they got the National Guard to kindly offer their cooperation in this one. So probably the best landing of a spacecraft in a movie too, in the very beginning when it goes over Washington D.C. and you get to see all the monuments it passes as it goes over Washington D.C. and you have the whole crowd just start freaking out as they see the spaceship come to land in the center of Washington D.C. So what was the times like? So did people generally believe in UFOs in the 50s, Dad, and sci-fi and aliens from another world?
I don't think people really believed it. It was all brought up and it was all classified material. The Air Force would never release, except for maybe the sightings where you see something going through the air and with reflections. And I think a lot of it was meteorites.
Mm-hmm. Or weather balloons. Weather balloons was a big one.
Exactly, weather balloons.
So what happened when Roswell happened? Was it in the news frequently, or was it covered up? Was it quiet? It was on page one for a couple of days, and then nobody heard from it again? Or
no, it kept popping back in.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was always used for advertising, because I was just looking at the internet, and actually there were hundreds of science fiction movies that were on. Mm-hmm. You know, there was Forbidden Planet, there was all the, you know, even like The Fly, you know, where the fly went into a booth with a man and came out with a fly.
Oh, yeah. It's Vincent Price in the first one.
Yeah, so we just had to get more and more of them.
Yeah.
And people couldn't get enough. And I love to talk about my brother. I had an older brother, and all he wanted to do was go to movies.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, if you want to go back to, I'm moving a little ahead. We were in elementary school. When we were in elementary school, there were no allowances. But when we finally got up to ninth grade, where we were going, we grew up in Tiverton, Rhode Island. We were going to Fall River,
yep,
to BMD Durfee High School. And my father actually had been a teacher there. And now we finally got an allowance. The allowance was a quarter a day,
mm-hmm,
for each of us. You got a quarter a day. Mama made a lunch,
mm-hmm,
and it cost a nickel for a milk. So if you went in every day with your quarter and you only bought a milk and you ate Mama's lunch, which we generally did, you now had 20 cents a day.
Mm-hmm.
So conceivably on Saturday morning you had a dollar.
All right. And how much was a movie and a popcorn and a soda?
And here's what we used to do, getting a little older. We used to go into Fall River. We'd hitchhike, or it'd be a nickel for the bus ride. And if we hitchhiked, we'd get a free ride,
mm-hmm,
for the 4 miles of Fall River. We went to the Boys Club, where we were members. And we could go swimming, and we could play the pinball machines in the game room. And after that, we used to run out via McCoor's department store to head out for the main street.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about McCoor's department store was it had all the elite toys.
Okay.
You know, every town like Fall River, New Bedford, Lawrence, Lowell, Brockton, they all had the famous department store with the expensive Tonka toys and everything. And also we hit the television set area, where I can even remember back 1954, the first color television was up there. And you'd always be told, well, you can watch it for a few minutes, but you can't stay, as people would be coming and going, just like in the toy department.
And they'd have them outside to get people to come into the store, right? They had a lot more display windows outside for the public.
Exactly.
Right?
There were display windows, mm-hmm, in all the downtown.
So how much was a new color TV, do you remember, when it first came out in 1953?
Probably when they first came out, they might have even been $1,000.
No kidding.
It's just like DVDs and VCRs, you know, going from, you know, videotapes to DVDs and everything, mm-hmm, else, and even your player in the past. But
yeah,
what are we doing?
Laser
we work
disc.
Our way over. Then we go over to Adam's drugstore, where we could buy candy.
Mm-hmm.
So now you could get candy, penny candy or something.
Yep.
And before you got to the show where the candy was three times as much. And what we generally do, we used to go to the Plaza Theater, which was only 14 cents. That was the old theater.
That was the old theater. I was going to say, how many theaters were in Fall River?
Fall River had a dozen theaters.
Wow, no kidding.
Just like all the, from one end of the city to the end, North Main Street to South Main Street, there were theaters. And generally, as you moved up toward North Main Street, the Durfee Theater was the elite theater in town.
Yeah.
Those theaters cost a quarter. Plaza Flea House cost 14
and,
cents.
And the floors were always sticky from spilled soda, right? And popcorn. That's why you get the good price.
And even more than that.
Yeah.
And some people, there were a few theaters that they even opened 24 hours and people fought them.
I was in the Lowell Theater and I actually saw a rat run by a couple of months ago. And I actually saw a rat go by in the Lowell Theater at the showcase.
Yeah, they wouldn't doubt you at all. But the Plaza was famous for Tarzan, Johnny Weissmullen.
Mm-hmm.
It was always famous for the Flash Gordon cereal.
Oh, sure,
so
yeah.
So remember, we were now all growing up on Flash Gordon, because that went back to even the 30s.
Yeah.
You know, with the fake rocket ship and everybody, and good-looking Flash Gordon, whatever.
And it was an event, so you'd have a Flash Gordon cereal or a Buck Rogers, and then you'd have a newsreel or news item, and then you'd have the main feature.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
But a movie like today, that would have been in one of the major, the 25-cent movies to go in. I can, mm-hmm, remember seeing The Fly, Forbidden Planet, all of them. And the big thing is, we went from black and white, data still, to Technicolor, CinemaScope, 3D movies.
Oh, yeah, they were trying everything to get you into the theater, especially when television came in. They tried to pull out all the tricks to get you back into the theater.
And one of my funny things I want to show you, as life moved on, Brother Charles, he couldn't wait to get another quarter to buy 2 10-cent comic books or the quarter comic book.
Okay.
He couldn't wait to go to another movie for a quarter, so he couldn't feed it enough. Well, if you want to go back to the 50s, I even brought it with me. Citizens Savings.
Oh, wow. You got a little safe, a little quarter safe.
Citizens Savings Bank.
Yeah. So they used to give out coin banks.
I still have that bank. That bank goes back to the 50s.
Oh, yeah. Citizens Savings Bank from Fall River, Mass. Collects nickels, dimes, quarters.
Exactly.
Halves, even.
So the danger was if you put your quarters or your half dollars, if you ever had any, or your dimes or your nickels, and had a little thing to fold up a bill and put in the bottom.
Yeah.
If you put your money in there, you never got it back.
Oh, yeah. You needed to open it with a key, right?
Right,
and did the bank have the key, or did
the
they give you the key?
The key. You
no
did
kidding.
Not have the key.
Wow.
So as soon as your money went there, it was gone.
So they gave you the banks to save your pennies.
Exactly.
And then they wouldn't let you... You'd have to go to the bank in order to deposit it, probably. They probably want you to deposit it in their bank, right?
And I don't ever remember my brother Charles ever filling up the bank.
Wow, wow. So some more about Day the Earth Stood Still here. So George Lucas actually named a couple aliens in Return of the Jedi, Klaatu and Barada, and he had a species called Nikto.
Yeah, I didn't know where it came from.
Spencer Tracy was actually asked to play Klaatu in the studio, but they wanted it unknown because they were afraid that a well-renowned actor appearing from the spaceship wouldn't have been appreciated by the audience. So they didn't get Spencer Tracy for that. The spaceship itself was made of wood, wire, and plaster of Paris. And this was the first big-budget sci-fi film in years to be released by a major American studio since a movie called Just Imagine in 1930. So 21 years had passed before they did a big-budget sci-fi movie. And again, this launched the 1950s sci-fi movie craze. The giant Gort robot was played by a guy named Locke Martin, who was the doorman from the famed Grauman's Chinese Theater, because he was 7'7" tall. However, he had a bad back and he couldn't pick up anybody because he was so weak, and he needed to be aided by wires. So they actually have a lightweight dummy in his arms when he picks up Helen. And he also had difficulty when he was wearing the Gort suit, and he could only stay in it for about a half an hour at a time, or he'd get too tired. This was remade in 2008 with Keanu Reeves. I actually watched it last night, and it wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad remake, not complete. Not as good as the first by far. The budget was $995,000, and it made $1.85 million, so made back its money. It doubled it, and it has a 7.8 out of 10 IMDb score. Here's some dad trivia. I have this. I thought you'd appreciate this one, Dad. Well, while interrupting the world's electricity in the movie, it actually would not stop the cars that run on gasoline. It would stop the cars that run on gasoline, but it wouldn't affect the diesel vehicles since the engines use compression to run and not an electrical spark. So some people found that goof in the movie when they actually stop all the electricity. The diesel cars actually stop as well, and they wouldn't if the electricity is wiped out. And one of the things about the title, it's not really a spoiler alert, but what they do is they stop electricity on Earth for a day. So that's where they get the title, The Day the Earth Stood Still. And it's a great, great movie. It's one of my favorites, too. Again, directed by Robert Wise from 1951, that launched the sci-fi movies of the 50s here. So... You remember seeing this one in the theater, Dad? You went to the theater and saw this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? With Uncle Charlie?
Probably more than once.
Yeah.
It probably was in the big theaters at first and then went into the Plaza Theater. We used to nickname it the Flea House.
Mm-hmm.
We probably saw it again there.
And the Flea House?
And, of course, those were the days of double features.
Right.
So even if you went into the big theater to watch it, there was some secondary movie running behind it. And,
right.
And of course, the competition... These were actually coming in, and the biggest thing to watch in the 50s was Westerns.
Yeah.
Whatever you were watching.
And it wasn't a multiplex, so you could only really see the movie or two movies. It'd be a main movie and, like, another movie that was running with it.
A Flash Gordon and maybe a John Cameron Swayze newsreel.
Okay.
Because I can remember seeing Harry Truman, who was president from 1948 to 52, flying around in, I think, the Columbine,
mm-hmm.
which was a Lockheed Electra Constellation, which was Air Force One at the time,
mm-hmm.
especially over the floods of the Midwest. But as a little kid, the day the Earth stood still scared you. You know, could this ever happen? You know, that all life could come to a standstill? You know, could this robot that opens up and has this X-ray to just wipe everything out, you know, immobilize the army, the navy, and melt the machines of war.
Right.
You know, could this ever happen? And this was the first movie sort of portraying that.
Well, the other thing about this, too, is there's religious connotations to this, where he takes, where Klaatu comes down and he hides, he actually
right.
takes the name of the carpenter.
Right.
And Jesus was a carpenter, so there's these parallels to actually the story of Jesus with the day the earth stood still, too, which is another whole radio show in itself if we wanted to talk about that. But I did a paper on that years ago when I was in college.
Yeah.
So again, Day the Earth Stood Still. This is the first one of Paul's five movies today, five flicks. We do five flicks, and then we will also have a quiz, and we're going to be playing all the soundtracks in the background. So I'm going to bring you up to the next movie, and we will be back in just a moment. My father and I are going to take a quick break, and I'm going to leave you with the soundtrack to the next movie, and we will come in and talk about that one. It is Shane from 1953, a Western, here on Watch This on WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts.
I am leaving soon. And you will forgive me if I speak bluntly. The universe grows smaller every day, and the threat of aggression by any group, anywhere, can no longer be tolerated. There must be security for all, or no one is secure. Now, this does not mean giving up any freedom, except the freedom to act irresponsibly. Your ancestors knew this when they made laws to govern themselves and hired policemen to enforce them. We of the other planets have long accepted this principle. We have an organization for the mutual protection of all planets and for the complete elimination of aggression. The test of any such higher authority is, of course, the police force that supports it. For our policemen, we created a race of robots. Their function is to patrol the planets in spaceships like this one and preserve the peace. In matters of aggression, we have given them absolute power over us. This power cannot be revoked. At the first sign of violence, they act automatically against the aggressor. The penalty for provoking their action is too terrible to risk. The result is we live in peace. Without arms or armies, secure in the knowledge that we are free from aggression and war, free to pursue more profitable enterprises. We do not pretend to have achieved perfection, but we do have a system, and it works. I came here to give you these facts. It is no concern of ours how you run your own planet, but if you threaten to extend your violence, this earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
Stevens, creator of such masterpieces as Giant and his Academy Award-winning A Place in the Sun, enlarges the scope of the screen with a motion picture whose monumental background is matched by the stature of its moving human drama. Drama that began when a mysterious stranger rode in from out of nowhere to play a decisive role in the lives of these rugged pioneers.
You call me Shane.
Shane, who attracted the woman with his quiet strength, who fascinated the boy with the glint of his gun.
We'd all be much better off if there wasn't a single gun left in this valley.
A gun is as good or bad as a man using it.
From the clash of elemental forces, George Stevens has created a motion picture unforgettable for its spectacle and scope, its great human story, its deadly conflict.
I've heard about you. What have you heard, Sheen?
I've heard that you're a low-down Yankee liar.
From 1953, the movie is called Shane. The director is George Stevens. It's a Western starring Alan Ladd, Gene Arthur, Van Heflin, not to be confused with Van Halen, Van Heflin, Brandon DeWild played the boy, Emil Meyer, and an early role by Jack Palance, who was known for his Westerns later on in life, including City Slickers with Billy Crystal in 1991. So the plot is Shane. He's a skilled gunfighter with a mysterious past. He rides into an isolated valley into the sparsely settled Wyoming territory sometime after the Civil War. At dinner with a local rancher, Joe Starrett, and his wife Marion, he learns that a war of intimidation is being waged on the valley's settlers. Though they have claimed their land legally under the Homestead Act, a ruthless cattle baron named Rufus Riker, great name, has hired rogues and henchmen to harass them and drive them out of the valley. So Starrett offers Shane a job, and he accepts. The studio was Paramount Studios. It was not rated. Running time was an hour and 58 minutes. Pretty much a PG movie, G-PG movie, because it has some gunfights and a great barroom brawl scene. The soundtrack was by a guy named Victor Young. It's playing in the background. It's got a score of 7.7 out of 10 on IMDb, which is a great score for IMDb. The budget was $3.1 million, and it made a great amount. It made $20 million as a box office total. Dad picked this one, so this is Paul's flick number two, Shane from 1953, one of the best Westerns of all time, I think. So why'd you pick this one, Dad? You remember seeing this in the movies?
Well, I can relate to it because I'm 10 years old.
Yep.
And of course, cowboys and Indians and guns are the big things that every little boy wants. So what I remember was you'd get your single shot cap gun at first. The cap gun would be you put a cap in and you pull the trigger, the hammer goes down, and you get one cap.
Yep.
Now we got into rolls of caps. And now you had your cap gun where every time you pulled the trigger,
right,
the caps, the reel would unroll, and the next cap would go under the hammer, and you could go boom, boom, boom. But I can remember from this movie, the little boy who's about my age, unless he's 10, 12 years old, he eventually learns how to shoot from Shane.
Yeah, his name's Joey. Yep.
Joey. And the next thing you know, he's going, playing with his gun, you know, unloaded, and going, clicking it, and going, the hammer's hitting, and he's going bang, bang, bang. And that advanced into what I remember was playing with my friends. He's got your cap gun.
Right.
And you're shooting and going, bang, bang, you're dead.
Right, right.
And that was it. But, I mean, cowboys and Indians were just coming into play. I mean, we grew up on the Long Ranger from seeing it on television.
Yep.
In the late 40s, even before we had it.
Exactly, yeah.
That one in 53. So Roy Rogers was king of the cowboys.
Yep.
He became my favorite. He had the Gene Autry fans. He had the Hopalong Cassidy fans. And, I mean, this was it. This is what we watched. And as more and more shows on television going to Gunsmoke and Paladin, these were the shows which,
yeah,
became famous.
Yeah, Westerns became really forever. Huge on television.
Exactly, yeah, the main thing.
Yeah, and sci-fi and Western just completely the genres that took over. Like nowadays, pretty much action adventure movies are the big ones at the theater for the most part. But in the time of the 50s, westerns and sci-fis kind of ruled the box office for 10 years or so.
Yeah, John Wayne was the number one.
Yeah, and of course, Western. Yeah. Yeah, and John Wayne, number one Western. And also he did a lot of war movies as well. So this came out, and the youngest boy that played Joey, his name was DeWild. He was best known for his performance as Joey. He was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor. And Jean Arthur, who played the wife, she actually came out of semi-retirement. She was aged a little more than 50 years old to play Marion. And she was a silent movie star. She was a silent actress, and she had a friend and director, George Stevens, and she came out of retirement completely for this film, and then basically retired after this movie. She was never on another movie after this. Shane was originally scheduled for 28 days of shooting in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and it had a budget of almost $2 million. It finished after 75 days of shooting with a cost of over $3 million. So it cost so much, Paramount Pictures wanted to sell it to another distributor, feeling they'd never earn back their money. It ended up making a significant profit, though. Jack Palance had problems with his horse during filming. He didn't know. It was funny because he got to be known as a cowboy pretty much later on in life, but he didn't know how to mount a horse. So when he mounted the horse and he tried to get off the horse, they were two different things. The horse wouldn't let him mount the horse again, so they play it backwards. So when you see the film, you see him dismounting the horse, and then they rewound it so it looked like he was mounting the horse. When Shane and Jack first look at each other over at the Starrett Ranch, Jack Palance, again, was supposed to dismount for a minute and remount the horse, but he didn't know how. There's another scene where Shane first enters the bar, and he answers a question from the character Chris, "Are you speaking to me?" To which he gets a reply from Chris, "I don't see anybody else standing here," which is pretty much used almost line for line in Martin Scorsese's Taxi Driver, Robert De Niro's iconic, "Are you looking at me? Are you looking at me? Nobody else is here," pretty much comes from Shane. It was named the 45th greatest movie of all time by AFI, American Film Institute, in 2007, and it was also ranked number 3 as one of the 10 greatest films in the Western genre in 2008 by AFI. Again, Victor Young did the soundtrack, and it's just a great Western. I rewatched this. It's on Stars and Encore this month, and my father picked it out from the library as well. So it's not completely in the public domain just yet, but you can actually find Shane pretty easily on Stars and Encore this month. It's a great, great movie. Check it out. So tell me some more about this movie. What's another memory of Shane for you, Dad?
Well, what's the memory is the never-ending battle of the homesteaders versus the cattle ranchers.
Right.
The homestead is basically got 640 acres of land. That's a square mile.
Yes.
If you were willing to go out there and homestead the land.
Right.
And of course, the ranchers to a lot of were there first.
Exactly, and they got rid of the Indians and cleared the land.
Exactly.
So they were angry with the homesteaders.
And they got rid of all the buffalo too.
Yes.
And of course, and if you think about it, as the railroads grew, the homestead tracks were along the railroad lines and along the towns they built along the railroad, especially the towns where you could get a water supply.
Right.
But one thing in the movie, as you'll notice, there's one scene where Shane is building barbed wire fences. So barbed wire fences is what tamed the West.
Yes.
To allow the homesteaders to have their 640 acres, put up the barbed wire fence, and now the cattle couldn't get
exactly
in from the ranches.
Right, right, yeah.
So barbed wire was critical.
Yeah.
Barbed wire was the magic.
Yep.
To let homesteaders
When I lived in Texas, I had on the wall barbed wire that fenced the West, and I had like five different types of barbed wire
from
different periods, and I actually had that on my wall in Texas throughout grade school, grammar school there.
Yeah, when I was in the Army in the Midwest and Missouri, I always remember the concertina wire, and that's the coiled wire you see over the walls in the prison.
Sure, yeah, and that's what people would use in the mafia movies if they wanted to get rid of somebody.
Exactly, the razor wire.
Yeah.
So it's just a great movie. There's so many things in the one thing that's unrealistic is when that they all go into town on the wagons. And they leave the homestead unprotected.
Right.
Nobody ever left the homestead unprotected.
Right. Right.
Whoever was left there behind them had the gun.
And they were ready.
Bullets.
Yep.
And to watch your place, because otherwise, you know, people just overran you.
Yeah.
So that's it. So there's some big highlights that I liked in the movie. The big fight in the saloon.
Oh yeah, it's got to be one of the best bar fights ever in a movie.
Exactly.
If not the best, it's great.
Alan Ladd just can't be killed.
He has two whiskeys. All right, so he's gotten whiskey thrown at him before.
Right.
So Shane comes in and he's been told to be peaceful by his boss. So he comes in and one of the ranchers throws whiskey on him. So the next time he comes in, he orders two whiskeys to try to make peace, and the guy doesn't want him. So he says, "You're not going to drink it in this bar." And Shane says, "You're right," and punches him in the face into the next room.
Right. Yeah.
Just great.
Yeah, there's a lot of... So there's, and then, of course, this is after the Civil War, so they're Civil War veterans and gunfighters. And the one guy, they finally... Jack Palance shoots him, and then they have a funeral for him. Then they burn the house down, and Shane and Joe fight and rides into town, you know, to watch the end of it. Shane kills Wilson, Jack Palance, and rides off, and Joey's calling to him saying, "Come back, come back."
Yeah.
And Shane keeps riding off. That's how the movie ends.
Yeah, because Shane basically tells him, he says, "I'm a killer." He's like, you can't, you know, I can't stay. He's like, "I can't be a rancher. I'm a killer."
Exactly.
Pretty much. But it's a great, great movie, and one of the best westerns. And it really holds up pretty strong. When I watched it the other night, super entertaining.
Yeah. And the CinemaScope Technicolor is great.
Yeah.
The Grand Teton National Park. I went cross country with my brother on a motorcycle in 1964, and as you're riding through Wyoming and you see the Grand Tetons out there, you just can't get them out of your mind. They're so beautiful.
Mm-hmm,
the way
mm-hmm.
they just rise up from the prairie. It's just unbelievable. I mean, it's such a beautiful country. Everybody should take the time to drive across country in a car.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's the best. Another movie that happened much later was Far and Away with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman, and that actually covers the Homestead Acts too, when they go out and they actually lay their claim, and they're on the horses with everybody, and they're all going to grab their claim. That's kind of fun. That was directed by Ron Howard. I think came out around 93 or 94 or something like that. But yeah, this is just a great, great Western. It's worth checking out if you haven't seen it. Again, it's called Shane's from 1953. Be back in a moment with film number three. It's WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. The show is Watch This with Chris Earle. My guest today is my father, Paul Earle. I'll be back in a moment.
Thank you. be somebody in there.
Who? Where do you think they come from?
How would I know?
They're in some place. Mars is near the Earth right now. Happens every 18 or 20 years, they say. Men from Mars. What do you think?
Maybe these are not men. Not like us.
Everything human doesn't have to look like you and me.
If it's men from Mars, we ought to let them know we're friendly.
Don't fool around with something when you don't know what it is.
We'd be the first to make contact with them. See?
We'd be in all the papers.
How about that?
We could show them we're friendly, huh? Walk out there with a white flag. Hey, I got an old sugar sack in my car.
Going to say to them,
welcome to California. Come on.
Understand us.
We're talking sign language.
They'll understand us all right.
Sure.
Sure? Everybody understands when you wave the white flag, you want to be friends? Hey there! Open up!
Come on out! We're friends!
That's right! We welcome you! We're friends! Yeah!
Film number three of Dad's Five Flicks today. War of the Worlds from 1953. It's a sci-fi thriller. Its director was Brian Haskin. Stars Gene Barry, Anne Robinson, and Les Tremaine. Or Les Tremaine. I guess it's Les Tremaine. Plot is a small town in California is attacked by Martians, beginning a worldwide invasion. Simple as that. Studio was Paramount Pictures. Of course, it was written by H.G. Wells. He was a heavy hitter. He had a lot of great stories. It's rated PG. Its running time is an hour and 25 minutes. Its soundtrack was from a person named Leith Stevens, one of the two, Leith or Life. I think it was Leith. Nominee for Best Sound, Best Film Editing, and it won for Best Special Effects. It has a 5.1 out of 10 IMDb score. Budget was $2 million, and it broke even. The story was by H.G. Wells again. The estate of H.G. Wells was so pleased with the final production that it offered George Pal, the producer, his choice of any of H.G. Wells' other properties. And George Pal chose and directed The Time Machine next in 1960. The film, while it had a budget of $2 million, of that sum, only 30% of it, $600,000, was spent on live-action scenes. And a whopping $1.4 million was spent on the special effects. Preceded by Orson Welles' 1938 radio broadcast as a homage to Orson Welles and his famous War of the Worlds radio broadcast. Voice specialist Paul Frees appears on screen as a radio reporter and does his Orson Welles vocal impersonation. It was followed by a TV show that ran from 1988 to 1990, plus a remake by Steven Spielberg in 2005 with Tom Cruise, which was kind of crappy. But this is a great, great movie, War of the Worlds 1953. So tell me about seeing this one, Dad. So Uncle Charlie enjoyed Day of the Earth Stood Still, and you said this was your favorite sci-fi. Is that right?
Yeah, this was a favorite. And what was awesome was, again, the color. And I always liked when the snake-like thing came out of the spaceship and it could maneuver around and look for everybody.
Yeah.
And up until that time, I'd never flown in the plane, and I can remember Gene Barry and his Anne Robinson. I can remember they in a light plane in this movie, and they crash.
Right.
And they end up
in a house or whatever is going on.
Yes, one of the creepiest parts of the movie.
Yeah, and the thing's down there looking for him all the time, and they're evading the thing.
Yeah, one of the highlights of the movie.
That was the highlight. And every time I see a little plane, I say to my father, can we go flying in a little plane out of the Fall River Airport? And he always said no. My father was a lot older than my mother, born in 1889. He was in World War I as a naval lieutenant, World War II as a merchant marine officer. In between the wars, he was a teacher for 22 years. And he'd never go up in an airplane. And he died of a heart attack, having never gone up in an airplane. Uh-huh. And yet he'd made 42 voyages to Europe and South America in the merchant marine.
He was a sailor. He never wanted to be in.
Survived them all.
Yeah.
But people are funny. All I ever wanted to do was learn to fly.
Yeah.
And that was the highlight of the movie for me, seeing them flying, crash landing, surviving, and then the little things they're looking for. But as it got bigger and bigger, watching the whole world get wiped out, and I saw the remake too, especially when they're walking back in Boston City in the background. What's gonna kill the space creatures? And of course, finally, you know, we see what these space creatures look like.
Right.
And of course, they didn't look human.
Yeah.
Okay, but they lived. And of course, the dramatic end for anyone who hasn't seen it. What is going to end the War of the Worlds, where all of civilization and human beings are being eliminated? And what does it? Germs.
Right, it's bacteria. The grace of God as well. The grace of God.
The great facade killing the aliens from outer space. So yeah. It's an unbelievable ending.
Right.
If you've never seen it, and don't let anybody spoil it.
Right,
I mean, it's
right.
Just as this thing start to die and they flop around, and that's the greatest ending you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
You know, nothing could end this War of the Worlds and this annihilation of civilization as we know it.
Yeah, because it's very similar to The Day the Earth Stood Still. The aliens basically have the Martians, rather, and this one have a notch up on us the entire time, technology wise.
Right.
It's like we're never going to beat them in either movie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this one basically, you would have thought maybe they should have brought some space masks with them.
Right.
You know, some Neosporin and.
Right.
So,
exactly.
You know, some antibiotics and some Neosporin. But yeah, so spoiler alert, that's basically how it ends, is the oxygen and the bacteria in our atmosphere. Yeah. They don't adapt to it, and then all the aliens just start dying left and right.
And what's fascinating is here we are with all we've done, you know, computers, semiconductors, and we still have the annual flu vaccination, and we mm-hmm. don't even talk. We try to target everything, and we don't even do it. We had another bad year with people getting the flu with a strain we've never seen before.
Right.
It's I can't believe it.
I got the flu in November, right. At the end of November.
Exactly.
And I had a flu shot, and it was horrible.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it was horrible this year.
Yeah. I've been getting the extra special one. Uh-huh. Now that I'm a senior citizen.
Oh, what's extra special? What do they give you? Two shots?
It's called the high dose shot.
Oh, really?
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I haven't gotten it, but I've been getting that ever since I turned 65, I think.
Right.
That's when I finally gave it. And then you still meet the people that say, I've never gotten a shot. I used to be one, too. I never had
those are the carriers. Those are the ones that are going to kill us.
Until maybe I was 50 years old.
Yeah.
That I never get a shot. But once you turn 50, it's like, give me everything.
Yeah.
And if you've never think you've had
load
a shot.
Load up.
If you join the Army, you get every flu shot in basic training. And
right.
Guess what happens if you lose your card showing you the shot you've had? What do you think happens to you?
I don't know.
You get them all again.
Oh, my God, really?
They don't care that you lose the card.
Yeah.
If you're like going overseas. At least at that time, I'm going back to 1965.
Right.
You get all the shots again, and then they'll give you another card saying you got all the shots.
Uh-huh.
But here's a quick one. I'm a few, about a month ago, I'm visiting my mother-in-law,
uh-huh.
who's in a rehab hospital. And I go in there, and I run into this guy. I like to walk around while my wife was with her mother in the room. And I says, how come you're here? She says, I had an operation and I'm here 11 days to recuperate. He says, oh, I said, where do you live? He said, oh, I lived in Brockton. And I said, whatever the discussion was, he'd been in the Army He'd been in the Army, and then he told me that was the first time he ever got a shot.
Yeah.
For the flu, or a smallpox vaccination.
Yeah.
And he said,
smallpox goes back to like the 50s, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you used to get the needle on you that looked like a little round permanent indentation would be on your arm from getting the original smallpox.
It's better than the alternative.
So here I am talking to this guy, and he'd been in the Army where he said he got his first shot. I said, how come you never got shot a smallpox? He says, I had one sister, and when she was 5 years old, she got the smallpox vaccination, got a reaction to it, and died.
Wow.
And he said, after that, my mother never let me get a shot.
Can you blame her? Yeah.
Anything at the school.
Can you blame her?
And that goes. He was older
than
I.
Did she get smallpox, or she just got an infection?
She had a reaction to it.
Wow.
And she died. But he said, he was 88 years old. He said, I never got another shot until I was in the... going into the Army.
Yeah.
You
can't blame him.
Well, yeah. there's always that.
Well, you never know you're allergic to something until it happens.
Exactly.
You know, if shellfish or peanuts or whatever. Like, more people are allergic to peanuts than ever before.
Oh, exactly.
You know, and shellfish. Plus, there's like eggs and stuff in a lot of these flu viruses.
Exactly.
They'll put some eggs in there, they'll scramble up some eggs, and throw it in the flu virus.
Yeah,
shoot it into your system.
Yeah.
Who knows what's in there? All we know is the doctor says get it, so you get it.
Yeah.
We're putting a lot of faith and trust into these people.
Exactly. Where are we going? It's like Reese. Lots of people now, Reese's Pieces are full of peanuts, right?
Yeah.
And that's the most, I think that's the most giveaway candy at Halloween. You might
be
allergic to peanuts.
Oh, right.
And
right.
You're going to need your EpiPen.
Yeah. So, the Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I know a few people, you know, but I mean, that wasn't something as a kid, you know. As my friend Derek used to say, it's like people used to be wiped out. It was called Darwinism.
Right.
But it's like, now it's just crazy. But that's War of the Worlds, 1953. Just a great, great flick. Two great sci-fi movies you picked there, Dad. Let's go up to the 80s. This next movie is going to be from the 80s. An Officer and a Gentleman is coming up next here on Watch This with Chris Earle and Paul Earle. Here today until 7 p.m.
Had no resistance to the bacteria in our atmosphere to which we have long since become immune. Once they had breathed our air, germs which no longer affect us began to kill them. The end came swiftly. All over the world, their machines began to stop and fall. After all that men could do had failed, the Martians were destroyed and humanity was saved by the littlest things which God in his wisdom had put upon this earth.